You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 474 of the Well-Fed Women podcast. I'm here with Stefanie Ruper, and today we are going to, for our little pre-discussion, we're going to be talking about the Stanley Cups. Not the hockey version, but the one everybody's been talking about. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about protein myths, building and maintaining muscle when you're on the struggle bus, you're having kids, staying motivated when you're on your period. And for our last question, you might enjoy this, Steph, is what are our favorite things about each other? So that's all we got. So welcome, Steph.
Hi.
Just a few little things.
Just a few little things. Hello, everybody listening. I just realized that I am not recording on my normal recording mic. So I'm trying to plug it in.
Fiddle around. You sound great. You look great.
Okay. Well, it's my MacBook speak. It's my MacBook microphone happening right now. So good to know. Yeah. I don't know why it's not connecting.
So you look great. You have your new glasses on.
Oh yeah. Are we going to talk about my new glasses?
We can. I'd like for you to share exactly what it's called, so people who might be experiencing the same things might note. And have you seen, like, in the last few weeks, have you been dealing with the same symptoms, or have they gotten like a little bit better?
The current state of my theory, and it's always evolving because, you know, you get data and then you revise, is that, you know, accidentally taking too many B vitamins and just like really put like gas on the fire of my headaches. And that forced me to really dig into like what could be going on. And I had looked many times for new information. And there was just so little about headaches. And everybody always just says like, well, they just happen. We don't know. It's one of those things, you know. But I ended up discovering, having a theory, there's a big old nerve in the face. It's called the trigeminal nerve. And it's responsible for like just about everything that happens in the face, your muscles, chewing, sensation, it's related to your eyes, like, you know, all that. And that connects to your whole sensory autonomic system, your vagus nerve. Like it's, you know, it's very important. It's very big and very important. And when people have dysfunction with this nerve, it's really hard. So a lot of what I read in people having inflammation in this nerve really resonates with the symptoms that I have experienced. And I did some more digging and I ended up discovering a new kind of optical lens that has kind of been developed over like the last 10 years or so, I would say. It's kind of like, I don't know if y'all are familiar with Invisalign, but like dentists and whatever sign up to provide Invisalign, but Invisalign's like its own company, its own deal. And so NeuroLens is its own invention, company, deal, whatever. And then optometrists can like sign up to be a provider and there's a machine and it like looks at it, but optometrists can also just look. Ophthalmologists, optometrists can just look at your eyes and use their human judgment. And I think that is wise to sort of see how the machine is seeing, how the human is seeing and create a plan. So these new lenses, apparently I now know the eyes, you know, and my prescription is quite severe. I'm at a -8 in that neighborhood. And so I don't know if that's related to this, but like in addition to correcting for how far away something is and your ability to focus, your eyes need to work together to focus on something. And if there is a misalignment in how your eyes communicate together, if you do a lot of focusing, then that can put stress on this whole face nerve system. Like it's inflammation and it can create light sensitivity. And that's my biggest symptom. Yeah. Like face pain, tension in the face and the head, eye dryness is a huge symptom, neck and muscle tension around the neck and shoulders, and light sensitivity. You know, it's funny, we don't think about it, but reading is quite new. Like it's an invention, and focusing at short distance, human eyes look at trees real great naturally. I mean, if you have a good prescription, but when you're focusing and also like the words on a screen are lit and and they kind of like they shake very minutely, kind of the way that fluorescent lights flicker and you can't tell. And stuff on screens is similar. It's not the same, but it's similar. It's different from, you know, natural lighting or just looking at the pages on a book. And so they suggest that if you have eye fatigue, if you have any of these symptoms, you might want to consider, and I'm not like, this isn't a sales pitch. I've only been wearing these glasses for 2 days. It feels quite significant for me, actually, I would say, it helping my eyes focus like this, but it's only been 2 days. So we're going to have to circle back when I have some more data, but apparently like it, you know, could help resolve these symptoms.
It's so interesting to me. I mean, I love the screen. I love that I get to look at your face. I love that the work that I get to do and the businesses I get to run. And I know from you and I personally talking, you have upped your screen time. A few weeks ago, you mentioned you're like, I have an 872-page Word document. Like that takes a lot of looking at a screen and scrolling and typing and writing. While I appreciate the work that we get to do, and the work that, you know, I can't remember. I was watching a movie recently and it was wild to think about how people would make simple trades like on Wall Street without computers. It was a lot of phones and a lot of back and forth and you confirmed and how people did business. You met in person and you like sent letters. And so like there was nobody was sitting on a computer working as little as like, you know, 40 years ago. Like that was not integrated into society. And so the influx of how screens dominate our lives is, I think we're seeing, especially in our generation now solely is working on computers for the most part. Then in our off time, we're scrolling on our screens on our phone. Our screen time has just exploded. Now our kids, a lot of our kids in our country are just growing up on iPads. And so managing that screen time, one, adapting and understanding how our bodies respond to that. Like we live in a world that is toxic and not very good, conducive. You know, the modern world is not conducive to a healthy life currently. And so it takes, yes, we have to like learn, and me and my nervous system stuff, I've had to learn how to adapt to manage my time appropriately. And that doesn't even include the emotional strain which I know you're off of Instagram, but what can pull you in when you see people's highlight reels and when you see people commenting and getting in comment wars with complete strangers. And we're seeing the destruction and the pain all over the world right in our fingers. So it's a lot. It is a lot. I'm glad you found something that has helped you be able to adapt. And I know you and I've talked about too, just being able to positively regulate your time spent, especially with personalities like ours, which is like, we want to work until we get it done.
Yeah, I'm so passionate about my work, but I have had to set, you know, and things just kind of kept getting worse and worse. And I had to set really hard boundaries. And, you know, they say like pain is like the one, it's like submit. Like you must accept, yes. You must submit, you know? And I realized that head pain is like the only thing in the world that would stop me from doing my job. And it's like, oh, that's why I'm having it.
Yeah. Your body's like, and we're done.
Yeah. Here. And I had to set really hard boundaries in myself. I just like, I couldn't look at the screen I couldn't, it hurts. I look immediately and it would just hurt. And I had to spend some time away. And now hopefully I want to move forward with balance and boundary. And that's just like, that's just how it is, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. And especially with the move to Zoom, like you said, everything is on the computer. And so I try to be very cognizant of that now and to take minutes every couple hours, every hour, whatever, to look at other things, to walk around, to all that kind of stuff. The thing about screen time, like they write about what I experience, you know, and I've been experiencing it since high school, because that's when I started doing close work on the computer. They're calling it trigeminal dysphoria. If anybody wants to do some research about like, how screens, I don't know, like I have suffered so much with my head pain and my light sensitivity for the last 20 years. And it's wild to me that this could have just like been it. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, who knows? We'll see. We'll circle back and see how my theories develop.
I've been chasing being without chronic pain for decades at this point. And I finally, I actually just heard somebody talk about it this way. And I am finally at a place now where I feel like my pain and my ailments are actually a blessing. Like, they have taught me so many things and put me in situations and led me down paths that I would have never gone otherwise. I mean, really, like, my whole business is because of the fact that I couldn't, something kept me from achieving what I wanted to achieve. And when you have to actually sit with that, for me, it was rough. It was rough to sit with that and say, okay, my expectations are not being met. I can't cope in this way. I can't cope by running my body into the ground. I can't cope by exercising. Now what? And so I actually had to take a completely different path. And I'm still learning that day after day. I'm still learning, you know, even as a mom and what my body can handle, I'm still learning, okay, like, it's totally changed my viewpoint on my body and what I want for the future and what's valuable and what I put my time into. And I'm, you know, I've brought in other things and other modalities and things that have changed my life in so many ways for the better. So now I'm finally at that place, but there's so many times where I was like, everybody always says, why me? Whenever you get a diagnosis with an autoimmune condition or you struggle with a thing that's taking joy away from your life. I think being mentally capable and strong and healthy, being able to work through those makes you stronger mentally and have a better appreciation for what you can do and gives you a better, you know, direction for what's valuable in your life and where do you want to put your time and your effort and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, you may not be there, but I kind of finally feel like I'm there. So do you want to talk about Stanley Cups?
Okay. I'm going to add one quote to what you said, and then I want to talk about this stuff. It's so important to me right now. And it's related. I think I look at it every day. It says something like, the portal to every next level lies in the parts of yourself that you avoid. You know, and I have so often found myself near a point where I might actually come to the realizations that you have and build these new ways of being. But the habit is to, like, use willpower and to run and to move and to do all of this stuff, to be super, super, super active. But for me, like, I really, really have to push myself to move slow. Like, that's my work right now. So anyway, we're all on the way. I'm also, like, I am very grateful for my experiences of pain as you know, it's hard to say, Ben, because, you know, I want to talk about Stanley Cups. Y'all know that I did give a preliminary Stanley Cup tangential rant in January. So I'm like, I'm here for it.
Wait, you did? Why don't I remember this?
Well, remember the rant about the water bottle industry?
Oh, yeah.
That was one of my favorite moments on this podcast. We've got a lot of good ones, but I was really happy to be able to let that out. So
glad this was a venting avenue for you. So Stanley Cups, lead in the bottom. This was something that a lot of people have been talking about. I know a lot of people probably know the lead. I think her handle is like Lead Safe Mama. Yeah, Lead Safe Mama. And she is kind of well known for going on the hunt and finding lead in these common products. Well, something happens. Apparently, I didn't realize this, but it is semi-standard in quotations. This is at least what Stanley is saying. For there to be, when you vacuum seal a stainless steel cup, you use like a lead seal or plug, so to speak, on the bottom. And then you cover that lead with the exterior, you know, water bottle, whatever that would be on the outside. So it's encased in the water bottle. However, on Stanley, they put a little button on the bottom and that button has been popping off occasionally. Well, people took their little lead meters to it and found that it had high levels of lead. And I find this to be an interesting thing. I'm not so much surprised that there's lead in the bottom of the Stanley Cup. I actually think it's really interesting to watch how this all carries out with consumers and producers. So we have the consumer saying, hey, this has got lead in it. We're not okay with that. You have other consumers in the comments section saying, this is not a big deal. Why is everybody so, you know, this it's encased. No one is ever going to be exposed to it. You're not drinking from it. What's the problem? So you have very two different viewpoints. And then you have Stanley coming out and saying, these are within FDA limits. So it's not our fault, essentially, is what they're saying. And this is very standard. And this is what people use. So what says you about it?
I was like all ready to go second. I think, I don't know. I mean, I've been thinking about this since yesterday afternoon. And I think companies almost never have our best interest as their first priority.
You think? And, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. We just need to live in the world knowing that. And also, when people are well-intentioned, they still might cut corners, or they still might not do everything like perfectly. And also, is it possible to do anything perfectly? You know, make a water bottle. Yeah, maybe it is possible to do that perfectly, or to do it in a way that doesn't have lead. They could have not done that. Probably. I don't know how to vacuum seal stuff, but there seems to be companies that vacuum seal things without lead, right? So yeah, it's very interesting. I think what I might contribute to this conversation is how I relate to such products and such things, you know, lead safe mama or whatever. Do your thing. Okay, cool. Thank you. Enlighten us to where there is lead. Fine. But I just, when information like this comes along, I will use it. I am not going to spend my life trying to find all the potential sources of danger in it, because life has danger in it. And as I have said on this podcast many, many times, we all get in the car and we put our kids in the car, you know? And so that's like risk. Risk is we walk out the door, we go to work, we go to school, we do, you know what I mean? We do things, and there's risk intrinsic to all of them, including consuming products that may or may not have stuff in them that, you know, so that's how I'm going to continue to relate to things. But I'm still not going to buy a giant water bottle, because what an industry that is. They are so expensive. All right. And they can charge that amount of money right now because they've made everybody think that they need to drink like 600 liters of water a day. Fine.
Fine. Yeah. Okay. Another soapbox. I forgot about that.
I had to refer to the earlier rant. I'm out. I'm done. What do you think?
Okay. So I'm not surprised by it. I have a Stanley cup. It was actually given to me. I've never used it because I don't like drinking out of like a plastic straw like that. I'm a Camelback person, to be honest. It's a bite valve. And I've been using them mostly because they were what I used for triathlons, running in your bike. It's very easy to grab and sip and put it back down. I love them. I also have a Yeti. This is my element. And I love Yeti. So yes, I have some exposure to plastic just with the plastic straw that goes into the water bottle. But I also really love Hydro Flask, and I have a couple of those. And the reason I really like my water bottles is because I really like cold water. I love ice cold water. And the Hydro Flasks are really nice because you can unscrew the top. It's all stainless steel and you drink from it and there's no plastic. So I like that aspect of it. According to this guy on the internet, he says, you guys need to comprehend something. All vacuum stainless steel tumblers, no matter what the brand, will have lead pellet seals. I got a lot of comments after that. That was like, I've seen you commenting this on multiple posts. How much is Stanley paying you? Not all companies use lead sealing dots. There are alternatives. And as consumers, we need to demand that companies stop using lead in their manufacturing process. I have to agree with that. I think as consumers, we can say, if there's an alternative, why are you using the one with lead, especially when it can pop off? And we know most of the people using Stanley cups are moms, and kids are going to be putting their hands and grabbing things, and our kids put their mouths on everything. So like, probably, I mean, we share our water bottles, probably not the best idea to put lead there. So can we find an alternative? And I think that we need to be holding companies accountable, because like you said, Steph, they are not out for our best interest. They are in it for their best interest and what makes their bottom line great, especially if they have a board and, you know, they've been bought out by a company, which I don't think that Stanley has yet. I'm not really sure about their business model, but I think that it's important for us as consumers to demand more. I did see that Hydro Flask has come out and said very clearly that they do not use the lead seal. So spend your money elsewhere. You know, Hydro Flask makes great water bottles and they have like cool prints and stuff. I got like a really cool USA print when the Olympics were happening. So that's my vote. I do have one other thing about Stanley Cups. There is a potential lawsuit now. This came out just about a week ago. It's only been submitted, so it's not like a thing that is set in stone yet, but actually quite a few people have come together and said that they should have disclosed it, that there was lead in the water bottle, and so they're being sued. So it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. I think that will it change the way companies act? Probably not. They're probably still going to just cross their fingers and hope that they don't get found out, or they're going to make sure that they don't get found out. But I do think that this should be sort of a wake-up call to maybe people that are trying to do things right. Do your testing ahead of time. And even, I don't know what's going to come of this lawsuit since it was within quote-unquote FDA levels. But the interesting thing is, like, it's clear that any amount of lead is harmful and toxic. And so I can't get behind this whole, well, it's in within reasonable limits. I mean, shouldn't we be doing everything we can to like reduce exposure as possible? And if there is a no lead alternative, like why are we not using that? So usually it comes down to money, and that's just, it's just unfortunate.
Especially considering how expensive they are.
Experts have said that.
I mean, like, honestly, right? I'm like, this has to be the best bottle that has ever been made. It must. And it's not. And, you know, that's disappointing.
It's a movement. Yeah. It's a thing. It's a product just like all the other products that have come and gone. TY Beanie Babies.
It's very powerful branding. Like, you know, they're it's a good business model. It's like when they started selling water. I'm just kidding.
I will say that experts have said that the risk of lead exposure could occur if the base comes off, even though it's unlikely that a single lead exposure to lead would lead to any problems. But they want to make sure that your children don't touch it. Like, okay, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it's so tricky because, you know, toxins are always in doses and they're always personal. There are things that don't bother anybody that give me really extreme problems, right? And there are things that, you know, and so. Yeah, generally speaking, lead exposure is a problem if you're like eating, you know, lead paint chips, you know, if you're exposed to it chronically. At the same time, like, parents care about their kids. And most importantly, if you're a company that's billing itself as like really pro-consumer and really pro-health, and then you're cutting corners, like that's just disingenuous. And today's consumers and humans and citizens have been deceived enough and our culture is suspicious enough. So I am really, really pro developing like consumer relationships with companies that like are transparent.
Yeah, same. Right. The transparency is key. I have tried almost every probiotic on the market over the last decade, and I have found one that has made a massive difference in my digestive health. And I think I know why. As someone who has really struggled with digestive issues since I was a kid, I notice a huge difference when I'm taking a quality probiotic versus when I'm not. I have been searching for a probiotic that takes a combination of evidence-based strains, including both lactobacilli and bifidobacteria strains. And I also wanted one that was proven to make it through stomach acid and into the digestive tract. And I have found that in Doctor's Choice probiotic from MD Logic Health. Ever since I started taking it about a year ago now, I have not had any digestive issues. I'm talking no cramping, no bloating, no IBS, even when I eat out or eat gluten-free treats. And here's why. Doctor's Choice is formulated with 30 billion live beneficial bacteria per capsule. It has a mixture of 10 lactobacilli and bifidobacteria strains. Research actually shows that when these are taken together, it's anti-inflammatory. It actually helps your digestive tract. It also contains FOS, which is a powerful prebiotic. Doctor's Choice is made by MD Logic Health. It's manufactured in a USA GMP FDA registered facility. It's tested for potency, and it has a special delayed release technology to ensure that it actually makes it into your digestive tract, which I feel like has made a huge difference for me. If you struggle with chronic digestive issues, leaky gut, feel like you get sick all the time, or just want to optimize your body's ability to break down food, including protein, I highly recommend it. Go to mdlogichealth.com/doctor's choice and use coupon code WFProbiotic for 10% off. Again, that's mdlogichealth.com/DRSCHOICE and use coupon code WF Probiotic for 10% off. Okay, so let's jump into questions. Question number one is from Caroline. She said, I know I should be eating more protein-dense foods as I age, thanks to your wisdom. I still struggle to meet my protein goals. What do you think about vegetarian sources of protein? I hear they are just as dense in protein as animal products. Do they count or no?
They absolutely count. They absolutely count because when you eat them, they're in you. Animal protein sources tend to be, they're denser in protein. Plant protein sources are usually mixed up with carbohydrate. So if you're eating legumes, beans, peas, and that's like lentils, all that kind of stuff, your protein is generally in a matrix of carbohydrate, and you're going to have a mix of protein and carbs. And then if you're eating nuts and seeds, you can also get protein, but it's mixed up with fat and stuff. So if you have, say, 50 grams of beans versus 50 grams of salmon or 50 grams of turkey, you're going to get more protein in the 50 grams of salmon or turkey because you have a higher ratio of protein. And when you're eating an animal protein, it will be what we call complete. Protein is a catch-all term for a whole bunch of amino acids. Some of them your body can make, but you need to get the rest from your diet. And in animal sources, a complete protein means that you're going to get all the amino acids you need. An incomplete protein means that some of them are going to be missing, and then you have to play like Jenga. No, it's not a good analogy. If you're a vegetarian, you have to be, you want to
make opposite of Jenga. You have to build the Jenga back. I know where your mind Jenga. Was.
You have to play reverse Jenga. I know I wasn't thinking fast enough about my analogies. So there are four complete proteins in plants. So there's quinoa, which I'm a big fan of. There's soy, there's hemp seed. Sorry, I just said hemp seed. Buckwheat. I should have drawn that up. I thought I just had them in my head and I didn't need to write it down. Noelle might be Googling it right now. She's smiling at me. So I think quinoa is an excellent complete protein as a plant. Soy has like some estrogenic stuff, right? But quinoa is a complete protein. You can pair it with pretty much anything, sweet stuff, savory stuff. It tends to be decently well tolerated, although may not be depending on how sensitive your gut is. And so those are your options for complete protein if you're a vegetarian, or you can just mix it up. But it does count. It does count. You get less protein and it's incomplete. But I think rounding out, say that you like just have chicken in the fridge and you're only eating chicken breast. I think rounding that out with some plant protein is great. You get to switch up your macronutrients. You get to switch up your micronutrients.
So the complete
vegetarian
sources of protein, which I didn't know. This is a random one. Blue green algae. Who's eating green algae? If you're using that as your protein supplement, source,
you can supplement. Okay, with
sure.
It.
Yeah. Soybeans, hemp seeds, buckwheat, quinoa, blue green algae.
Oh, hemp seed. I was correct. Hey.
Da, 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 da. So I find this question interesting because I have gotten a lot of these comments more on the Insta, which is like, oh, there are a lot of plant foods that are just as dense in protein. And I think maybe our concept of density is a little different. So I do believe the industry as a whole has misled people a lot on actually how much protein is in certain things and protein. I'll get to it in a second because some of the images that I see in my feed, I'm like, are you kidding? But protein density at its core is just how much protein a food has in relation to the calories it contains. So how many of those calories are from protein versus other things like fat and carbohydrate? Foods are made up of protein, fat, and carbohydrate. Those are macronutrients. And they're made up of those three macronutrients in various amounts. Some foods contain mostly carbohydrate, while others contain mostly protein. Now, here's the problem. When you go to the store and you grab a protein bar and it says 9 grams of protein on the front, you may think that, oh, this is a good source of protein. It's protein-dense food. But if you flip it over, you'll see that it actually has 290 calories. There is nothing wrong with calories. We love them. We need them to thrive. We eat them all the time, right? But that's not a protein-dense food. That's a calorically dense food. And you're simply eating enough calories to get you to what seems like a good amount of protein. As a review, and this may help turn on some, it like be an aha moment for some people, 1 gram of protein has 4 calories. This is what we all learned in high school. 1 gram of carbohydrate has 4 calories. 1 gram of fat has 9 calories. So in that bar that had 9 grams of protein, only 36 of the calories of the 290 were from protein. So I think that sometimes we have to be able to look at a food and say, all right, how much protein is in here in relation to the calories? Now, I'm not a huge fan of focusing on calories. I think that it completely skews. I don't think calories are irrelevant. I think that hyper-focus on them skews our complete perception of what our body needs and all the things. But I do think being able to look at a food and assess, is this actually protein dense or is this just dense in calories and it's getting me to protein, is a really, really useful tool to have. So when it comes to foods like beans, nuts, or grains, a lot of these, even these complete proteins, so quinoa, buckwheat, hemp seed, they absolutely do count, in my opinion, towards your protein goals, with a small caveat, which I'll cover in a sec. But these are not protein dense foods. Plants are just not. So let's look at a few examples. Peanut butter. Why does everybody say peanut butter is so dense in protein?
If people say that, that's terrible.
Yes, it's a fat, folks. It's a fat. It is 71% fat, 14% protein.
Yeah, nut butters are almost all fat, all of them.
Peanut butter is more higher percentage of carbohydrate than it is protein. So yeah. Almonds are 72% fat. I actually made a little graphic to help people see this in my no-nonsense protein hacks guide. It's totally free. I made it in response to everybody asking a ton of questions. Go to coconutsandkettlebells.com/protein prep. You can download it immediately. But I made this graphic because I wanted people to see, what does 30 grams of protein look like across all of these different foods? So 1 cup of almonds equals 30 grams of protein. Now, I've seen a lot of these memes that are like, here are the nuts that are highest in protein. And it'll say something like 1 cup of almonds, or it will put it in ounces, just super misleading. Mm-hmm. And they don't put the calorie count. Do you know how many calories are in 1 cup of almonds? That's 826 calories to get you to 30 grams of protein in almonds. Okay. That's a fat. Black beans, they are a carbohydrate. They are 70% carbs, 26% protein. Garbanzo beans are actually 65% carbohydrate. They have a little bit more protein, 22% protein. You'd have to eat about 600 calories of garbanzo beans and about 100 grams of carbohydrates just to get you to 30 grams of protein. Quinoa, it is a complete protein, and I think that that's fantastic. But you'd have to eat almost 4 cups of quinoa, 832 calories, 146 carbohydrates to get you to 30 grams of protein. This is, again, not to say that carbohydrates are bad or calories are bad. This is to show you that these foods, while they have protein, they are not dense in protein. They are, in fact, a fat and a carbohydrate. In comparison, you'd have to eat one small chicken breast, about 150 to 200 calories. And it's a complete protein to get to 30 grams of protein. That is a protein-dense food. The majority of the calories in that food are coming from protein. Now, again, plant proteins do absolutely count. However, they just aren't complete because they do not contain enough of one of those essential amino acids like Stephanie was talking about. Vegetarians actually have Again, this is something that not a lot of people talk about, but vegetarians actually have higher protein requirements because plant proteins are not well digested and they and processed by the body as animal proteins and are not as complete. So research suggests that vegetarians should eat 10% more protein than meat eaters. This, though, and this is why I'm like, are you kidding? Because this, on top of this increased need for protein as you age, is a lot of plant food. That's a lot of plant food. And we're not even going to discuss like what that can do to your gut, the amount of fiber, all that kind of stuff. I also think that this is a huge disservice as you age because chronic conditions, we know chronic conditions, including autoimmune disease, actually increase your need for protein because inflammation requires amino acids. And you can see with all of that, you can kind of see how someone's health would tank as they get older if the majority of their protein are coming from plants and they're only eating a small amount of protein and they're not being intentional with that. So as you age, it's a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for fragility, muscle and bone loss, inflammation, triggering autoimmune conditions. There's also a little bit of literature that shows too low protein can actually trigger autoimmune conditions, and that low protein intakes are inversely associated with inflammation. So protein intake, if you have the higher the protein intake, the lower inflammatory markers, and the lower protein intakes, especially as you age, are associated with higher inflammatory markers. And inflammation can impact your entire, it impacts your immune system, your ability to manage sicknesses, cancers, that's your gut health, that's everything. So I think plant proteins are really an incredible topper. And I think, you know, it's great to eat hummus. I think it's great to eat quinoa as the base for your things. I think it's great. I eat almonds here or there. I'm not eating nuts as much as I was maybe in my 20s. I eat a little bit, maybe here or there, but mostly now when I make muffins, I make them with oat flour because oats do better for my stomach and digestion. And I might put some pistachios on a salad. And I think plant proteins are a little, we can consider them little toppers, but you can do so much for your health by just eating sufficient protein, bioavailable protein that is complete, and eating at least 100 grams a day minimum as you age. Like, eat meat, lift weights. This is what everything boils down to for me.
Caveman diet. Caveman.
And
diet.
I'm not even that much into like a caveman diet, no, but like, you I'm know just, what I mean?
I'm just kidding. And I'm 100% there with you. Like, I think of legumes as carbs with like a sprinkle of protein, you know, and as of nuts as fat, you know.
They are. So. Yeah. I mean, peanut butter is more carbohydrate than it is protein, which.
Yeah. Fun pro tip. Anything with the word butter in it is more fat than anything else.
Sure.
It's a butter.
Yeah. Just,
also, people eat hummus as a source of protein. That's wild. Hummus is okay. Not only is it just chickpeas, it's mostly the oil, right? So anytime you have like a sauce, it's mostly the oil. And please be very cognizant of what that oil is. This drives me nuts. Speaking of labeling, if a hummus described itself at the store as an olive oil hummus, please read the nutrition label. It is almost surely added as like a sprinkle so they can put it on the label. It's at the end of the list of ingredients. It ain't olive oil hummus. It's a safflower oil or a soybean oil hummus.
This is so funny. I don't eat hummus that often. I mean, maybe for like a holiday or something, right? Where it's like a dip. But yeah. I was actually trying to get a hummus because I'm trying to put together some high protein snack ideas for my Instagram. And I want to create balanced meals that also have fiber. And so throwing in some carrots in there, I don't want to be like, eat your dry carrots. So I'm like, oh, it'd be cool to like pull in some hummus. And I start looking at all the hummuses. And the hummuses are it's just vegetable oils. Like, the majority is vegetable oil. I did find one brand, I think it's called Kava, that's organic, and it's just chickpeas. Like, they actually just like use the chickpeas, which is nice, but it's so not common. like most of the time it's just a vegetable oil spread. So
it's a vegetable oil soup. Yeah. That's chickpea flavored.
Basically. Yeah. All right.
Especially if it's real like inexpensive. Okay. Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, so hopefully that was helpful. And this is obviously why I'm really passionate about where we're at as women. Like we are at a really important time in your 30s, 40s, and 50s. This is such an important time to be eating enough, sufficient protein, eating high quality animal products, eating, of course, plenty of vegetables and fiber and all that stuff as well, but also lifting weights.
Lifting weights. I've been thinking about this a lot, like especially older women, you know, in their 60s and 70s, were very much raised in a world where weightlifting was just not something women did.
Yeah.
Period. And at least now the younger generations are coming into a world where weightlifting is more normalized for women more. And there's still all these myths about, oh, women, you don't want to live too much because something, you don't want to look like you have muscles because something. It's wild. Like lifting weights is without question, like one of the most important things you can do. Anyway,
your muscle tissue is the tissue of longevity. Okay. Period. So whatever we need to do to sustain muscle and build muscle, do that. Podcast over. This is what our podcast can basically be summarized as. Let's jump into question number two. This is from Brooke Elizabeth. She said, I need some advice. I want to build, maintain muscle and lose fat, which by the way, I'm putting this in here. It is totally fine. If you want to, you have a desire to lose fat. It's not right for everybody, but some people do have that desire and we validate that. However, I've been pregnant breastfeeding for the past 4 years and I'm currently 18 weeks in on my fourth pregnancy, yes, four kids, four and under. So I'm obviously not looking to lose weight right now, more to manage weight gain during this pregnancy. The only problem is sleep is spotty with constantly having young babies and toddlers. So I think I'm chronically not well rested at this point. I typically do a mix of strength training and cardio, but I'm barely making it through the day with enough energy at this point. And when I do even 20 minutes of low impact, lightweight strength training, I'm gassed and sore for the next few days. Any advice? Should I just focus on mobility, flexibility, and stability and nutrition? Would strength training actually be beneficial if my body is struggling to recover? I know nutrition is a huge part of it. I make everything from scratch, consume a lot of protein, eat the rest intuitively, drink minerals, take my supplements, etc.
So I'm going to go ahead and say that I think if it doesn't cause you pain, then some amount of weightlifting is good to include. Could be good to include. Now you mentioned that you're gassed and sore. By gassed, I'm guessing means tired. I'm not cool, so I don't know how people say things. And you do say that even, and I would always recommend 20 minutes of low impact, lightweight strength training, right? That's kind of my go-to like entry point for strength training. So it does sound like it could be a season for you to just like really rest because you have had four kids, four and under. Yeah. I'm really, really, really pro rest. And if you want to incorporate weight training, you know, we're talking about muscles and how important they are for health. What about one set a day? Like do a wall sit while you're scrolling on your phone a few times a day. You know, you could do some just keeping your muscles. I mean, you're actually probably quite active running around after your kids all the time. That could be your exercise. But if you want to do one set a day, I don't know. I would try that. And if I would look for an amount of exercise, weight training that you might do that is energizing. And for me, if I'm in the middle of a work day and I'm tired and I go do like 50 squats or something, that's usually like a little bit energizing. And so if you can do a set or two when it's energizing, that could be cool. Otherwise, pass.
I like that.
Otherwise pass. Four kids in 4 years is
yeah,
insignificant.
Whether you're active, it's hot and humid outside, you are regularly using the sauna, or you follow a whole foods diet, which is naturally low in sodium, you need to be thinking about replacing your electrolytes. This is one of the best ways to build stress resilience and support your adrenals. Electrolytes are minerals. They are like the spark plugs in the body because they're responsible for tens of thousands of reactions. Deficiencies show up as dizziness, muscle cramps, headaches, fatigue, especially if you get dizzy when you go from sitting down or laying down to standing. That's a huge sign that your adrenals need more support, specifically from minerals. One of my favorite ways, in fact, the only way that I like to replace my electrolytes is with Element. I started supplementing with Element after workouts. It made such a huge difference almost immediately in my recovery and how I felt throughout the rest of the day. Element makes grab-and-go electrolyte replacement packs with no sugar, gluten fillers, or artificial ingredients. Just tear open a pack, pour, and stir it into water. I've actually now been mixing it up like half a pack for my kids when they are sick or when they're out doing sports. This is so important for the spring and summer season when kids are out. I always have some on hand. It's in the car. It's in my purse because with sickness, workouts, overall just feeling overwhelmed, burnt out, going back and forth all day, driving around, it makes a huge difference and it's a wonderful pick-me-up. Right now, everyone, including new and current customers, can get a free 8-pack with every order. Element comes in boxes of 30. There is free shipping on all orders, and now all orders get a free 8-pack. To get Element, go to drinklmnt.com/wellfed and make sure to use the code WELLFED for your free sample 8-pack. That's drinklmnt.com/wellfed. I think right now would be a great time to focus on rest and nourishment. I think what you're experiencing is your body is not in a nourished state, even though you're doing your best to eat and eat enough protein and rest, your body is likely experiencing a significant amount of stress. And so therefore it cannot properly recover and build muscle from the workouts that you're doing. I think we can't discount the stress of not sleeping and just the general stress that young children cause, and much less four of them. Sorry, my mind cannot comprehend, because when I had two under two, I was gassed. I was not working out. I definitely was not working out pregnant, and I definitely was not working out a year after giving birth because I was so sleep deprived and my body was just drained. And so having what your body has gone through with these pregnancies, every pregnancy you experience, your body is being drained and tapped of nutrients because you're growing another human. And that's a huge effort. And then you're likely breastfeeding on the back end at the same time. And so you have always been in a state of depletion. And I think as women, we have to recognize that pregnancy and breastfeeding is a state of depletion. So we are not going to be in a fully nourished state. And then you throw on top of that screaming children and waking up in the middle of the night and just the demand mentally and emotionally that that takes. And you can see it's no question why you're struggling with soreness and not being able to keep up. So I think that this phase of life for you, and that's what I had to keep telling myself, was this is just a season. It's just a season, and I have to change the way I act in the season. It's not for forever. This is not your forever. This is your season. And I think in this season, you prioritize rest as much as possible within reason. I mean, even my 4 and 6-year-old wake up multiple times throughout the night. Like, we went to a cabin for spring break, which was wonderful. But I mean, we had kids in our room at least 3 times throughout the night. Nobody told me that 4 and 6-year-olds still get up all the time, but they do. And so when stuff like that happens, I'm like, oof, not working out tomorrow because I had such broken sleep. Sometimes I don't go back to sleep. And so I have to take a step back, and I'm not even pregnant. And there's only 2 of them, and they're big. They're big kids now. So I think you have to adjust your expectations a little bit, but also adjust what you consider to be a workout. What you did before is not what you're able to maintain in this season. What I would recommend doing is really focusing on nutrition, really focusing on getting high quality sources of protein and animal sources of protein. I know that's hard in, especially in pregnancy, first trimester, but focus on that. Just really dial that in as much as possible. And then, you know, ask for help when you can so that you can have a moment. And when you get moments, I would choose walking and getting out in the sunshine and breathing in fresh air. And then I would also potentially do some sort of pregnancy workout program. I'm sure there's some good workouts on YouTube, but focus more on keeping your core stability, on pelvic floor activation, learning how to properly activate your muscles. So I did not work out or lift at all during my second pregnancy because of chronic pain. And it did take me at least 2 years to gain that back on the back end. And that's fine. I did it slow and steady. And you know, I'm not able to do a pull-up anymore like I used to, but I'm fine with that because I am back to feeling strong and capable and I'm back to activating. What I wish I would have done was jumped into a pregnancy workout program that just kept me doing for 20 minutes a day, kept me doing activation exercises, whether it's banded clamshells, that sort of thing, so that your body is properly working, you're working on those imbalances and you're keeping your functional movement and strength. Then when you have the capacity, you can start introducing light weights again, and you can start introducing medium weights again and seeing how your body responds. I would, however, take the clear clues from your body, you saying you're gassed and sore for the next day, as a sign that it wasn't right for you. I don't think that's something that you should move through. So yes, mobility, flexibility, stability, band work, all that stuff. And then sleep as much as you can. And I know that's really hard. So,
yeah. By the way, like me saying one set a day is just
something.
If you really like enjoy, like if you want your muscle to burn a little bit, you know, 90 right. seconds a day.
Yeah, that's a good one.
4 kids, 4 years.
You're a superwoman. Question number three is from Jesse. She says, how do you stay motivated to eat well and work out when you're on your period?
Very interesting question. Well, something that's deeply operative in this question, something that we might want to unpack a little bit, is what is the assumption here about the experience of being on the period? Because a period can be experienced as low symptom. It can be low symptom. It can be no symptom, actually, other than the whole bleeding thing. But so a question for me is, for you, from me, is what is your experience of being on your period? And what is it that's making you feel unmotivated, right? Is it cramps? Do you have any kind of irritability or low mood or feelings of worry or anxiety? Are you ruminating more often? Do you feel bloated? All this kind of stuff. Like what is it that's making you feel unmotivated? And then is that something that you can address through a whole bunch of different ways? Right? Yeah. You can approach that with your diet in any number of ways. It's such a general claim. I'm not going to move into that. I'm not going to start describing it, but you can approach that through trying to help remediate that feeling, that symptom, you know, what have you. And the same thing goes for mood, right? Supporting yourself physically and emotionally, right? For me, this question is, how do I support myself physically and emotionally through my menstrual cycle? And can I improve the symptoms that I experience through my diet, through my lifestyle, through all this kind of stuff? There is a whole lot of stuff in our culture, this whole normalizing of periods being difficult.
Yeah.
Like it's supposed to hurt. You're supposed to go nuts. You're supposed to like all this kind of stuff. And like, yeah, that can be a part of the fabric of your experience. That's okay. It's okay. But also like, it doesn't have to be that way. Yeah. If you experience symptoms at any time in your life, you can get curious about it and see if there's something you can improve. There is no like, you must X because things happen. You know, we all have different challenges and difficulties, and like, we don't have to feel perfect all the time. That's fine. Most of the time when we discover that we have a condition, you know, like our bodies become habituated to certain ways of experiencing stress. And I kind of picture it like a pileup accident on the freeway. Like you have one accident or like one kind of hormone thing or one kind of mood thing or one kind of whatever. And then it's like a snag or something, and the body just like sends more resources there. And then it just like can kind of keep getting worse. So anyway, our bodies become habituated to these ways of addressing or living or experiencing stress or pain. And then we end up managing, right? And I think managing is great, right? Like I manage my head pain. Noelle manages other kinds of things. Like we manage the kinds of baggage that we all personally carry, but managing can look a lot of ways, and it can mean sometimes like getting rid of symptoms entirely, which would be great. Like we move towards that. We move towards that. Maybe it's an ever moving target, right? But we move towards that. And so there was nothing about womanhood that says like your period must suck emotionally or physically. It's not a rule. It's normal right now, but it's not a rule, and you can move towards it sucking less or potentially not sucking. So I would get curious about those things and then work on them. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to say like, oh, you have to be low motivation for whatever reason. You personally are, and it's related to a whole cluster of other things. I don't know what that is, you know, but I would get a little bit curious with it and experiment with what's driving that. And if you don't have the motivation, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I definitely, motivation's a really funny thing. I find that I don't know. I mean, we're all different. We have ebbs and flows in our energy and all this kind of stuff. And I do think that sometimes it's important if you're like not feeling super motivated to go out and find a reason to do stuff and then do it. Right. I think that that's really important. I think sometimes feelings of motivation follow from doing things. Like sometimes you have to do something in order to feel like you want to do something. And that's hard, but that's also just like how human experience is, right? And like biochemically. So assuming that you don't have motivation and you are struggling to find it, and you're going to get curious about what's driving it and like whatever, and get curious about your period, I'm not going to tell you whether you should just lay there and be unmotivated or whether you should like find some kind of idea or thing, you know, whether you should just like get out there and go do something. I think both approaches are valid, and you just need to decide which one you want for yourself. You know, what is the path that you want on your period? I can't tell you. Sometimes in my life, it has been that like when I'm feeling low, the best thing for me to do is just lay there, and I'll get up and move when that comes. But usually for me, I know that like I like to keep moving, and that helps me keep moving. And then I want to move more. And mm-hmm. I like that rhythm. And I just know that about myself. And we all have to decide for ourselves.
Yeah, I think I'm torn between, well, there's lots of things I'm torn between. Number one, I think you summarized it very well, which is your period doesn't have to be this like awful thing in which you're unmotivated and you don't feel well. I think that that might be a symptom of something more going on. Maybe you do have some imbalances in hormones. Maybe you are not supporting your liver sufficiently so that you're, you know, dumping hormones properly. And I think that getting a little bit more in tune with your cycle and your symptoms would be really helpful in this state, and that you can make little tweaks then to make sure that your period is not terrible and awful and all that different. I don't have any decreased motivation. I don't have any symptoms when I have my period. I notice a little bit more achiness. I will say the day before I start, I definitely get more irritable. And I'm like, why am I so annoyed at my husband? And then it's like the next day I'm like, okay. So that does happen. And I think that some of that is normal just with the hormone drop that we experience right before our period starts. But your actual period should only be about 3 days, 3 to 4 days. Some women might have a little bit more on the fifth day, but if that's your normal downtime, so I'm torn between two things, which is we have this thing called cyclical fitness. We can actually, you can actually adapt your training and your workouts to your menstrual cycle. And I kind of sometimes embrace that. I do different things if I'm not feeling it, knowing that I'm about to start my period or I'm on my period. I'll do less higher intensity stuff and I'll do more lower intensity stuff. So go for a walk or do some just basic strength training and maybe do a little bit lower weights, but do higher reps. It is just, it's kind of what I have coined intuitive fitness, not really knowing what I was talking about. And then really understanding, oh, that's what's happening. It's like my cycle's changing. So different, what's right for me in the moment is changing as well. And I think that that's totally fine. I'll link to my whole huge article, How to Work Out with Your Menstrual Cycle, in the show notes, because I do think it's pretty informative. It tells you exactly what's happening with the hormone differences and how that might change your physiology. On the other hand, I do think we rely too much on motivation to do things. And I think we misunderstand people who get a lot of stuff done. It's not that we're always motivated. It's just that we know the benefits. We know what we need to do. And so we make it really easy to do that because we know the benefits. I may not get up and be like, oh yeah, I want to work out today, but I'm going to go do it. I can't tell you, I'm not up every day going, yes, I want to do my PT exercises this morning, but I know the end result. And so I make it easy to do that. I make the situation easy. I take away the need for willpower. I set the stage. I made the room easy to go to. I made the workout space easy to go to. I set my day up in a way that allows it to easily flow into my day. And so motivation isn't, oh, you just have so much willpower. It's reducing the need for willpower and using your why to get you to do the things that you want to do. So that's all I'll say.
Cool.
Well, last question. Jacana Moda, what are your favorite things about each other?
What? Awesome question. My favorite thing about Noelle in this specific moment is this top and how it flatters.
You can say that.
Her being. It's been such a lovely visual experience in this podcast call this morning.
Guys, when we got on, Steph
he's
was
so
like,
beautiful.
She was like, Noelle, you should wear that color all the time. I was like, oh my gosh, I have the validation I need. I actually still have the tag on the shirt. I'm taking it off.
Yeah. Light, cool sage. It's a light, cool sage, everybody. Yeah.
It's looks the great spring summer version of the dark olive colors that I like to wear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about Noelle, I've got two. They're related. They're her intention and her integrity. I just love so much about humans, and Noelle is this, when they sit and they think, like, how can I be and do good? And we're here on the Well-Fed Women podcast, and we've been doing this for ages, and we talk about physical health, and physical health is awesome, but Noelle and I both orient towards the idea that the purpose is so you can like be and do good. And so Noelle conducts her relationships and is in her community, and not a whole lot of people in her position would like identify a cause and then do a ton of fundraising work for it. I think the Feed Fairfax run is just like, you know, that's it. Like Noelle and Ken were intentional about how to do something good. And then they acted on that question with integrity and carried it out. Another awesome thing about Noelle is Noelle makes things happen when she wants them to happen, period. Like when she started this podcast, Noelle literally emailed me and was like, you're going to do this podcast with me. We're going to change your entire working relationship and you're going to come on this podcast with me. And I was like, all right, got it. I mean, it was an invitation. I'm just kidding. Like there was no coercion, but she made it happen. So Noelle's a make it happener.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So two things for me too. I think number one, Stephanie is very selfless. Most of you can probably see this. Like she will sacrifice her own happiness and comfort for people she doesn't even like. Like she's just like,
I don't know if that's a good thing. That's an area of growth for me.
You are not like, you're the opposite of self-centered. You have a lot of self-awareness. And that's one of the qualities that I appreciate so much in my friendships is when you have, and just relationships in general, is when you have the self-awareness to know how you're existing in the world, but also how other people are and what they need. Like, you can see people for who they are and accept them, but you also know what they need and you're able to provide that, even if it's not like intuitive or natural to you, which I appreciate that. The second thing is, I love that 70s low drama. Like, you can, so like, you, we live really in a drama world. We live in a drama world and you're like, and no, I'm opting out. And I just love that about you. I love that you take this like really low, like easy approach. You're like, you know what? We can do what we need to do. Like, sometimes I am in freak out mode and stuff's like, it's going to work out. It's going to be okay. Like, we don't have to do it the way that these people are saying we have to do it. Like, we can do what's right for us. And so you just don't get wrapped up in what a lot of people would consider to be like normal human behavior, especially on the internet. And you made a really great comment like a few weeks ago, which is like, you know, everybody was getting so mad at the glucose goddess for coming out with a supplement. And your response was like, if I find myself getting angry or frustrated, I stop and I say, why am I having this reaction? So instead of putting it on the other person and being the victim, or, you know, oh, you're causing me to do X, Y, and Z, you're saying, how can I not be reactive? And let me like adjust how I'm responding. And maybe I don't even need to respond to this, you know? So I love that.
Aww. Well, thank you. Great. You know, I think the things are related, because when I come from a perspective of trying to understand other people, like, why am I going to get mad at them? Why am I going to get mad about it? I don't know. That's so funny. It's so funny how different I'm trying to wrap my head around these days about how different people perceive us from their lens, like from their experience. Mm-hmm. And there are people in my life who, like, I'm not a huge fan of the way that they understand me, but it's also because of the context in which they've met me.
Yeah.
I've always more or less been my best self around Noelle. So take it all with a grain of salt.
Same girl, same. But that's good. That's what a good relationship should be, is that we bring out the bests of each other.
Yeah.
You know, we're not always looking to like, I want to be in.
Well, neither of us would ever approach a relationship and be like, how can we manipulate and use this person? But
a lot of people do.
Especially in this like whole thing that Noelle and I have always been in, you know, the influencer space.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty young.
Gosh, totally. Yeah.
It's a shark tank out there. So anyway,
it's true.
We're great. Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to talk about how awesome we are again. It's our favorite.
Another thing I like. Steph is like really good at self-deprecation. It's like, you're so funny. Okay. So for more from Steph, follow her on Insta at Stephanie Roop. Insta. Follow her on the X. Stephanie Rupert. Well, she did an X symbol. It was pretty cool. Follow me at Coconuts and Kettlebells. Thanks for being here, guys. We will talk to you next week.